Accession number 28351, Reel 9.
Lord Peter Blaker, Reel 9. Could I now ask you, going back to when you joined the Foreign Office in 1953, I think it was.
Yes.
Did you know or had anything to do with the Information Research Department, the IRD?
I did from time to time, not very close relationship, but certainly I was very well aware of its activities and found it extremely useful. It was something which wasn't talked about at that time. I think it was a great pity when it was wound up by David Owen a good deal later, because it did supply one really with quite a lot of information about what was happening behind the Iron Curtain, and quite a lot of material with which to counter what the Soviet Union was doing. I think that's about all I have to say about the IRD, yes. But I was certainly very well aware of it then. I'm just trying to think when I would have come across it later. I suppose not as a minister, because when I came back as a minister in 1979, it had been wound up by David Owen, who left office when Margaret Thatcher came in. So it would have been not only when I was dealing with the European Defence Community in the early 50s, but also when I was dealing with disarmament and so on later, when I was in the House of Commons. But in the meanwhile, I would have certainly been aware of it when I was the private secretary to the Minister of State, who was dealing with matters related to the Cold War, disarmament and nuclear deterrence and so on.
You said this was very good and useful information. Did you have any worries about it at all? You know, the fact that it came from a secret source, a covert source.
I didn't have any worries about it at all. I was delighted with it. Yeah. I thought it was extremely valuable. And I was upset, disappointed when David Owen wound it up.
Since it's been wound up, there's been quite a lot written about it, as you probably know. And Christopher Mayhew in particular, his role in setting it up.
Yes.
Accusing it of being propaganda, you know, that it was filtering out a lot of interesting information about the Soviet Union, which might have been more positive than the material it was sort of disseminating. What would you think of that from your knowledge?
Do you mean more positive about the Soviet Union?
Yeah, well, if there was anything positive coming out about the Soviet Union, about achievements, or that this would not be included in the IRD material, but just they were selecting sort of grey propaganda, the sort of negative things, to really persuade.
Yes, there was a Cold War going on. And quite a number of people in politics in this country were on the Soviet side. I don't mean they were communists. I do mean that in Parliament they were taking the Soviet point of view. I remember when we were in government, I think, under Ted Heath, and again when we were in government under Margaret Thatcher, there were some individuals in the House of Commons who were constantly taking the Soviet side and saying that, for example, we, the British, who claimed that the Soviet expenditure on defence matters was 9% of their GDP, that was a gross exaggeration. And it certainly was an exaggeration deliberately. That was the information we got. Myself as a civil servant or a politician was getting that sort of information. And so we did what we could to justify our estimates. And then after the Soviet Union collapsed in 1989, 1991, and the Soviet books were opened, it became evident that the Soviet expenditure on defense matters in the times I'm speaking of had been 13% of GDP. So our 9% estimate was very low. compared to the reality. And of course, that was one of the things that bust the Soviet Union. We can come back to that sort of subject later on. I should have something to say about it in connection with the with Margaret Thatcher's time and Ronald Reagan's time. So our information was conservative as opposed to exaggerated.
Do you think there was any concern because, you know, when it was revealed that this department had existed because of its covert nature, that people like, say, journalists, television, documentary makers would have been using this material without knowing, you know, where it came from, its source? Was there any concern felt about that?
Not inside the official machine. Certainly not as far as I was concerned. I thought it was an excellent thing that we had lots of information. Because, after all, we were being attacked by the Soviet Union propaganda-wise and in any other way they could think of. And we had to defend ourselves.
I believe the material went out to the Third World countries as well, didn't it? To the colonies or ex-colonies.
Yes, I don't know much about that, but I think it was distributed to people with whom we thought it would be useful.
I know Christopher Mayhew told me that he used to promote publications, books and booklets, you know, giving information. I'm just trying to think of one of the... A Peaceful Coexistence, for instance, when Khrushchev came in, things like this, and what his view of it, you know, to get another view countering what Khrushchev was saying Peaceful Coexistence was all about. I believe this booklet was called Coexistence Plus, and it might even have been written by Mayhew himself. But I'm wondering, you know, did you know of any of these booklets and how useful they would have been, how important they would have been?
They would have been very important. Absolutely. I think Chris Mayhew did a very good job. I have to remember that he came, became a minister under Bevin, I think. Bevin was very robust about resisting the Soviet Union. We owe him a great debt, really. Right after the end of the Second World War, he became the Foreign Secretary. And he realized very rapidly, if he hadn't already known it, how dangerous the Soviet Union was. That, of course, was reinforced when the Soviet Union blockaded Berlin for a year in 1948, and nothing went into Berlin or came out of Berlin except by air. The Soviet Union was trying to seize Berlin, thus delivering a shattering blow to the confidence of the Western democracies. And thank goodness Bevin was there, and the Americans were robust also. So we held on. If we'd lost Berlin then, it would have been a very serious blow. Because one has to remember that in those days, Italy, though a democracy, having come back to democracy after the war, or shall I say moved on to democracy after the war, because we have to remember Mussolini before the war, Italy was in danger of voting itself communist. And there was a fear that France was going to do the same thing, Greece also. So the situation looked extremely precarious in those days, soon after the end of the war in 1945. So we had to defend ourselves. We had to defend ourselves, amongst other means, by information. It was the Information Research Department, IRD. It was absolutely justified, and I think did an excellent job. I wrote a book, or published a book, with Chris Mayhew on a different subject after I ceased to be a minister in the 1980s, which was not about the relations with the Soviet Union. It was about small states. It was called Small is Dangerous, and it was about the many small states which now exist in the world, tiny little states, which were so small that we wouldn't have thought some years back that they could exist, but they do exist. 191 countries, many of them small. The smallest, as I recall, being Tuvalu, 10,000 people, population of 10,000, independent, member of the United Nations. So we thought this was a subject that really deserved to be dealt with. How would these small states survive?
You were saying in 1978 it was a mistake to close IRD down. And David Owen, I believe,
yes.
You mentioned, was the minister who did that. Was the information very much missed at that time? I suppose this would have been the year before the invasion of Afghanistan, wouldn't it?
Yes.
When it was closed up.
I was already a minister when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. Christmas Day 1979, I think. Now, I think one has to assume that David Owen was under a certain amount of pressure from his own party, because there were a number of people on the left of his own party who were critical of the IRD, who were taking the, what I would have called, taking the Soviet side, always saying that the Soviet Union was misunderstood and we should be kinder to the Soviet Union, we shouldn't be rearming and that sort of thing. So it had a job to do, but I can imagine that David Owen was criticised.
I know when the news of IRD came out some years ago, Christopher Mayhew was greatly criticised by the media for actually his part in IRD. And
well, one has to realise that the media want to sell themselves. They've got to find things which are going to interest people. And they take the view, whether it's justified or not, I don't know. I've never been in the media. They take the view that shock and horror sell television programmes, radio programmes and newspapers. So that they're inclined to take the gloomy view or the critical view. And I think there was an element of that in their criticism of the IRD. It was a sinister secret organisation. Sinister secret organisations always, their existence sells media.
Alongside this, there was the development of what, again, Christopher Mayhew called the Cultural Cold War. You know, how the communist sympathisers, fellow travellers, as they're known, aren't they, set up this series of exchanges with Soviet artists, painters, ballet dancers, and how another organisation was set up by the British Council, and Christopher Mayhew very much behind it, to get these cultural exchanges going. Did you know anything about this? I think it was called the Soviet Relations Committee, which was set up, which is still going today under another name. Is it the British Russian Society today?
I think that's folded too. I used to be a member of an organisation with that sort of name. I can't remember the exact name. And then after the end of the Cold War, that folded because it wasn't felt to be necessary. I don't know about Christopher Mayhew's role in this sort of area, but I do remember that Harold Macmillan set up an organisation, the name of which I can't remember, in order to take the propaganda offensive away from the hands of the Soviet Union and put it into respectable hands. And that became quite a useful body. Of which I was a member. So Macmillan said it must have set it up in the early 1960s. I can remember going to its 25th anniversary lunch, and Fitzroy Maclean was in the chair. He was the president of this association, and Harold Wilson, who was retired from the premiership, came as the guest of honour. I think he was actually its president. Yes, Christopher Mayhew was the chairman. Not Christopher Mayhew, I mean Fitzroy Maclean was its chairman. And we came to the time for the toasts, and Harold Wilson rose to propose the toast of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, which we all drank to. And Harold sat down. And a minute later, he got up and proposed the toast of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. I don't know whether I should be telling you this story, but he did get a little forgetful when he got old. So that was when that body still existed, Harold Macmillan's body. But now it has expired because it wasn't needed anymore.
So if I could now go back to when you left Ottawa to catch up with your Foreign Office career. I believe you said you were on the Arab desk, were you?
The United Arab Republic, which had been created after the Suez Affair in the late 1950s. I arrived on this desk in 1960. And the United Arab Republic consisted of Egypt and Syria, which is a very unexpected and rather odd combination of countries. And the Middle Eastern experts, of whom I'm not one, said it's never going to last. And I was asked by the head of my department, which was called the Levant Department, rather a charming name, to make an assessment of the likely duration of this new country. They had a common parliament and a common government of sorts. And I said, well, it's a very improbable arrangement, but you never know with these things. They might last a long time. And I then went on holiday to Capri. I don't speak Italian, but I read enough Italian to read the headlines in the newspapers in Capri, the Italian newspapers, which were saying, explosion of the United Arab Republic. That was in the week after I'd written my paper. So it confirms that it's very dangerous to make forecasts in the international field. So then I was asked if I would like to be the private secretary, that is the civil service private secretary, to the Minister of State, Joe Godber. And I said, yes, I'd love to do that. So I transferred from the United Arab Republic desk to his private office and spent a couple of years there, which I very much enjoyed.
And who was the minister?
Joe Godber. G-O-D-B-E-R. And his role was disarmament and the United Nations and other things as well, but those were the two main things. And I find that absolutely fascinating. In March 1962, the disarmament conference started in Geneva with 18 member countries. It's still going, I believe, with many more than 18 now. But in those days, it started off with great energy, 18 countries from all over the world. And we all behaved as if we were going to disarm the world in 6 months, which was quite ridiculous. We met every day, 5 days a week. And Joe Godber and I used to fly out on a Sunday evening to Geneva to take part in the following week's discussions. And we flew back to London on Friday evening and then had to catch up with what had happened during the week. So it was quite an arduous affair. And we didn't make any progress for quite a long time. We were really tackling first the issue of nuclear disarmament and unilateral disarmament as opposed to
multilateral. Could you remind listeners to this who the powers would have been at that time, the nuclear powers?
Well, it was, it didn't include the Chinese, but it included the Americans, ourselves, the Russians, the Soviet Union, that is, and France. And those were the principal powers, those were the nuclear powers, and then there were another 14 countries from all over the world to give other continents a feel that they were involved, which indeed they were. I remember the Egyptians making a very interesting proposal after the conference had been going for a few months. And it was very well received. It was a proposal which we had put into their heads because we thought it would go better if it came from the Egyptians as opposed to ourselves. And we were absolutely right. If we put it forward, it would have been rejected flat out by the Soviet side. It didn't lead to a particular conclusion, but it was well received. And we used to meet as why is it not stopping? Hello?